Hi, and welcome to Macro Monday. We talk macro and try to make sense of markets that I mean, how can they make sense? Remember, on Friday, stocks were rallying on the hope for stimulus bill passing or almost passing this weekend, which obviously didn't happen. And yet stocks were still up today as we come into a month end, but more importantly, a quarter end rebalancing, where due to the outperformance of the equity market and the underperformance of the bond market relatively to each other, all these asset allocation models at the institutional level, pension level, they have to sell equities to buy bonds. And yet for some reason, so far, even with two trading days left in the quarter, the buyers have outpaced the sellers. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. In today's episode, you're going to learn what I got wrong about the CPI. I know you're going to love that. What the greatest threat to the kingdom is, and what I look at to try to protect the kingdom from that. Did the Fed continue its quantitative easing program? And last, why are hedge funds short the NASDAQ? Let's start out by the CPI, because I know you really want to know what I got wrong. And I've said that housing prices weren't a factor. Well, I was partially right and partially wrong. And I was wrong on tuition. So what is the Consumer Price Index? Well, you can go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics website, and it tells you it's a measure of the average change over time in the prices paid by urban consumers for a market basket of consumer goods and services. Now you can dig deeper in here, and it says, what does the CPI cover? Food and beverages, housing. This one we'll have to figure out where I was wrong. Apparel, transportation. I was wrong on that. Medical care, recreation, education. I was wrong on that. And communication, other goods and services. Now there are some questions are, does the CPI actually measure inflation? And generally your answer is no. Well, the Bureau of Labor Statistics thinks otherwise. As they say, inflation has been defined as a process of continuously rising prices. Again, that's important and should say broad-based in my opinion, or equivalently of a continuously falling value of money. And the CPI measures inflation as experienced by consumers in their day-to-day living expenses. Again, this is one of those key things that some of you said, look, why doesn't it factor the price of a house? Well, the price of your house is not a day-to-day living expense. So, and it goes on to mention some other things depending on what you're looking at for inflation. And the best measure of inflation depends on the intended use of the data. And the CPI is generally best to measure for adjusting payments to consumers when the intended allow consumers to purchase at today's prices, a market basket of goods and services equivalent to one they could purchase in an earlier period. Now, I do find it interesting. Some of you have mentioned that you see your prices going up considerably on every year. And yet here in the kingdom, I see things a little bit different. For example, this is my office. In case you're wondering, yes, the Bond King's dad and brother came into the inner sanctum and made all those water stains go away. I've been in this office for about 15 years. My landlord has raised my rent a grand total of zero times. So it's the same rent I'm paying 15 years ago. That is disinflationary. You know, I look at, say, my office phone bill, for example. It doesn't change, yet the services I get from it, every so often, they get better. Disinflationary. My internet services. Now, the price on that can fluctuate from time to time, but generally, I'm getting more speed now for the price that I pay than I have in the past. Disinflationary. I look at my personal expenses. The car I currently have is not the cheapest car I've ever owned, but the lease payment, by far the cheapest I've ever paid. So if I look around at my bills, and I do track all my expenses on a monthly basis and I can compare to prior years, I don't see, you know, 8-10% year over year inflation. In fact, I actually see disinflation in certain aspects of my own budget. So why is inflation the biggest threat to the kingdom? Well, after all, I am the self-anointed bond king. And in my global macro, well, I shouldn't say global, in my macro thesis, which I need to break down, this show is kind of a running commentary of my thesis. And I know for some of you, it would be really helpful for me to actually break that down. But in the first phase of that thesis, think of it like a story arc, I'm very bullish about bonds, and I believe there is going to be a big collapse in interest rates and a big surge higher in bond prices. And I also believe we're much closer to the end of that than the beginning, because I had originally had that as a 3 to 5 year position from a macro perspective. Well, we're pretty close to the end. Not quite there, but getting pretty close to the end. So what is the biggest threat to my view from a bond king position if I am long bonds? Well, the simple answer is that would be interest rates going up or treasury yields going higher. And what is the likely cause to make yields go higher? Rising inflation, right? So if inflation goes up, generally interest rates go up. That is the belief. But there's a lot of things I look at, not just the CPI, and I kind of wanted to walk you through some of them so you can see that part of my view isn't that, okay, your house price went up. And I know I got to answer the question of what I got wrong. I just realized that. But I'll come back to that in a second. It's not just the fact that your house price went up is what I'm looking at. I'm looking at inflation across the board because it's not going to show up from one place. Now, what did I get wrong? Good thing I remember that. All right, housing prices are not factored into CPI. However, and I thought the CPI was just rent. They also do rent equivalents for your home. So if you live in expensive areas such as San Francisco or Los Angeles, they do a rent equivalent of your house price and factor it in the CPI. I have made many claims that tuition is not factored in the CPI, and I am completely wrong about that. Not only is college tuition in there, but so is high school and elementary school tuition factored, as well as room and board while your student is away. Didn't know that. I also thought new cars weren't a factor. I know used cars are a factor. I didn't think new cars, but not only are new cars a factor, so are lease payments. So there's a few things that I got wrong, and you can go check out the Bureau of Labor Statistics website at your convenience to maybe find some other things that I was probably wrong about. So where does inflation start, right? I have to look at that as the biggest threat to my kingdom. So as I look out from the castle over the lands and I say, okay, where are the threats coming from? The biggest and first one is from currency printing, because currency printing inflation is the problem. If housing prices go up, could a rise in housing prices spur inflation because people can cash out their equity and spend money? Yes, but what we have seen historically is that doesn't really make a big difference. It's historically currency printing inflation is the danger. And that's why we look at the H.8 or the credit data every Friday, because I want to see, are people out there borrowing more and more money that will get out into the economy and create more dollars? And so far, we have seen that credit conditions in the residential real estate market are effectively flat, and the commercial industrial space are contracting. So no signs of inflation there. But let's look at some charts that I put together for you. We have the consumer price index against 10-year treasury yields. And what you can see that there is a general relationship between these two. And right now, we have seen people saying, well, consumer prices are headed higher, and that's going to bring interest rates higher. It's going to be the other way around. The bond market is telling us that consumer prices aren't going higher. So where else do I look? Well, I look at the factory PMI data, and I don't have any charts on those. We also look at capacity utilization. So we talked about this last week. When a factory is becoming overutilized or nearing capacity, they have to add overtime hours, add more staff, and that costs more money and increases price. But generally, you can see that factory utilization, the trend has been declining for decades, right alongside interest rates. So even from the capacity or capacity utilization of factories is telling us there isn't likely to be inflation. How about the money multiplier? One of the strongest short-term indicators of inflation or deflation, well, it's starting to roll over because of the denominator, the monetary base, is going up. Well, they discontinue. I have to fix that. The monetary base is ticking higher. I don't know why it says that. Anyways, we know that this is rolling over and headed lower, and that is deflationary. How about the velocity of money, or how fast or how frequently money exchanges hands? Well, it's very, very low. Now, many people believe this is headed much higher. Well, the bond market is telling you, nah, not likely, because we've seen places here where interest rates collapsed and rose and the velocity of money went up. And we can see that here. And the bond market is saying, nah, I don't think there's going to be a big move higher in the velocity of money, but the market thinks that. How about the money supply? Oh man, everybody talks about these days, the money supply is so inflationary, it's going to cause interest rates to go higher. And yet very few of them, if any, have ever bothered to chart the two together, because what you'll see is there's really no major relationship between the two. In fact, the money supply has gone up, interest rates haven't budged. And so you can look through here and say, well, there isn't really a very good relationship between what could affect the kingdom and the money supply. Now, as Jeff Snyder of Alhambra Partners pointed out in a recent video he did, that the reason we're not seeing higher interest rates here is because the bond market is telling you that the money supply isn't growing fast enough. How about that? How about the monetary base? Again, this just flat, I just noticed this right now. The monetary base, everybody says, okay, the monetary base, as the Fed does QE, interest rates have to go higher, we're gonna get inflation. Well, here you have the monetary base, we'll just say it a trillion, currently just under five, but we'll say 1 to 5 trillion, and 10-year treasury yields went from, say, 4% to 0.67. So how does a rising monetary base lead to higher interest rates when it hasn't done that in over a decade? Because it doesn't. How about the dollar? See, it all comes back to me to the dollar. The dollar is the key thing here. It's one of the things I care the most about is where the dollar is headed. So I charted the trade-weighted dollar against the 10-year treasury yields, and you can see that when the dollar spikes, it generally brings interest rates down. Now, this is very supportive because look what's happened recently. The dollar went down. Remember, we've talked about this relationship that a falling dollar tells you that financial conditions are easing, yet low interest rates are telling you financial conditions are tight. So what we would want to see if there was inflation coming is a weaker dollar leads to higher interest rates, and it didn't happen. Interest rates have been effectively flat. So what is the bond market telling you? The financial conditions are tight. And in that case, the most likely direction for the dollar is higher, and that will also bring with it lower treasury yield. And then we can go on and look at that between the consumer price index, and we can see a fairly inverse relationship here that when the dollar rises, consumer prices go down. And so everyone's been talking about, oh, interest rates or consumer prices are going to head high. They're going to be so unaffordable for people. Well, wait till the dollar rallies. And the dollar is going to rally because the bond market is effectively telling you that is what is to come. Now, let's take a look at the big important question that is on many people's minds, on my mind, is did the Fed renew quantitative easing? Now, why does this matter? Well, because the Fed is helping play out the whole first phase of my thesis. By the Fed buying bonds, is particularly at the long end of the curve, when I say that I mean out at the 30 year, the Fed is causing bond prices to go up, right, bullish, and interest rates to go down, which means what direction is a dollar likely to head? Bingo, up. See, the Fed is a big player in part of my thesis here. So the question is, did the Fed renew their plan? And I said on Friday we would find out today. Let's go to the New York Fed website. And sure enough, they did, as we would expect them to. There will be no QE tomorrow, but resuming on Wednesday will be the next schedule, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 days. This seems to be the same 9-day schedule the Fed has been running there. Every once in a while, there's some of the order slightly adjusts, but the key thing here is they're still buying 3 purchases on the long bond every 9 days. And this is great because we've looked at the fact that primary dealers are picking up about $5 billion of long bonds at the Treasury auctions, and the Fed's buying $10.5 billion every month. So there's a shortfall where the dealers are going to have to go out to the open market to pick up $5.5 billion of long bonds to flip to the commercial banks to sell to the Fed. So you have all this purchasing power under the long rate, suggesting that long-term bond prices are headed higher and long-term treasury yields are headed lower. Now let's try to figure out what's going on with hedge fund managers and why they're short the NASDAQ. So let's first take a look at 10-year treasury note futures. We see hedge funds increase their longs a little bit. Remember, the market's still talking about how interest rates are headed higher. But it's odd, wouldn't you think, that hedge funds are saying, nah, maybe we think the 10-year treasury is headed a little bit lower. But look at the third year. This is the largest cluster of short speculative positions on the 30-year treasury bond, meaning these positions, which are large contracts, you know, they're based usually in $100,000 increments, are betting that bond prices are headed lower. So some of you have asked in the comments, well, what if there's a big sale of bonds on the market? It already happened. Speculators have been dumping bonds and still interest rates haven't gone up. Wait till this unwinds and these shorts become longs. You will notice when that happens, when shorts become long, interest rates go down, which are represented here in red. How about West Texas Intermediate? No change really on hedge fund speculative positioning. Seems like crude oil is finding a ceiling at $40 a barrel going into the last part of the year where demand generally goes down. Speculators increase their long on the S&P 500. Apparently, they're buying the dip. How about the euro, which is again on the as part of the trade weighted dollar? The euro is a big portion of the trade weighted dollar. So for everyone that's saying that no, the dollar is going lower, you have the largest speculative long position in the euro. When this gets unwound, and it eventually will, that means the euro is going lower. And guess where the dollar is going? You got it. It's going higher. How about gold? Slight change in positioning, nothing major here. As gold seems to head lower, many people, and we talked about this in the Sunday chart show, think that gold is going to firm up here pretty soon and head much, much higher. I think as your bond king is headed actually quite a bit low before it goes higher. And how about the NASDAQ? You have now the largest short position since the great financial crisis. This is off the charts. Now, why is that? Simply, investors and mainly hedge fund managers are irresponsibly long tech stocks. Everybody's piled into tech stocks because they're super duper bullish on them. So what happens when you're bullish on something and you're fearful that a big sell-off could occur? You hedge in the futures market. So to me, this looks like that hedge funds are doing exactly what their name says. They're hedging. Moving on to the Russell 2000, we've seen small caps kind of fall a little bit. Hedge funds still are holding on to their net long positions. The dollar is still very, very short. When the dollar is very short, it usually creates a counter trend rally and yanks all those short sellers into buyers. And the last volatility futures, remember monetary base, when the Fed does QE, it actually causes volatility to rise, but the market's still very short volatility, not record short, not as short as it's ever been, but still short volatility, thinking that the worst is now behind us. And I can tell you that is absolutely not the case. So I appreciate you joining me today. Be sure to like, be sure to subscribe, leave a comment. We'll see what I think. I'm trying to spend more time in there to reach out to you and make sure that you are part of this show as much as I am, because I appreciate all of you being my fans. And with that, I will see you on Wednesday. Oh, real quick, for those of you that watch the Sunday show, what's the deal with silver? Many of you asked, chart of silver. I don't get it. I think to me, silver is close enough to gold. So tell me, what's the deal with silver? And with that, I will see you on Wednesday. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It is not intended to provide investment or other advice. Materials not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by selling security, financial instrument, or participating in a particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter in personal capacity. Opinions expressed in this video that I do not reflect the view of Atlas Financial Advising or Steve Van Meter Financial.